Today we will start with Luke chapter 23. Now, at this time, they've already had three of Jesus' trials, three of the six. So they're halfway through at this point. The first three were had two trials before each of the chief priests, Annas and Caiaphas. And that was both under the cover of darkness. And then the third trial was before the Sanhedrin, and that was right at dawn. And so now we're starting 4, 5, and 6, which is before Pilate, and then Herod, and then back to Pilate. So those are the six trials. And today I just plan to cover the first trial with Pilate and then with Herod. And then next week we'd pick up with the last trial of Pilate. Okay, Kaufman gives a chapter summary and of Luke 23, and he says, here is Luke's record of the final three trials of Jesus. They are before Pilate, before Herod, and before Pilate again. Then Simon of Cyrene bears Jesus' cross. Then Jesus prophesies to the daughters of Jerusalem. And then Jesus is crucified between the two thieves. Then the crucifixion of our Lord says and has the three sayings on the cross. There's the inscription and the death of Jesus and the entombment. That's all 56 verses in this chapter. And then Kaufman gives a little introductory statement here. Since blasphemy was by no means a criminal offense among the Romans, the Sanhedrin consulted together and sought for some charge of which the Romans could take notice. As we follow their course, it will become evident to us that they found no new accusation against Jesus, and as a result, they decided to make use of our Lord's claim to be the Messiah. But they twisted the claim as to make him seem to assert an intention to rebel against the authority of Rome. Okay. So, they have to come up with some capital offense to which the Romans would convict Jesus. And so they hem-hawed around and tried to come up with whatever they could. And they came up, the only thing they could come up with is the claim that Jesus claimed to be the Messiah. And then they twisted that to say, so he's wanting to make himself king and there's no king but Caesar. And plus he also said that you can't pay tribute to Caesar. So he's petitioned the people not to pay taxes, which is an outright lie that's covered very well in Matthew 22. And but that didn't stop them from making the false accusations. But that was their line of thinking and how these trials progressed. Okay, so Luke 23, verse 1. Then the whole multitude of them, this is the Sanhedrin and what other Jewish hierarchy was there, and led him to Pilate. And Kaufman says, Pilate was the fifth governor of Judea, holding office from AD 28 to 36. In view of all that is known of this evil ruler from the writings of Philo, I've never heard of him, but I guess he was some historian that wrote about Pilate, among other. And from the New Testament itself, we know a lot about this historical figure. So from these writings of Philo and the New Testament, we know a lot about the evil Pilate. Luke 13 recorded that Jesus himself mentioned Pilate's mingling the blood of the Galilean worshipers with the blood of their sacrifices in the temple itself. And what is in this chapter alone provides ample information upon which to form a definitive judgment regarding what kind of man Pilate was. We'll get to later about this, what is brought to Jesus's attention and Jesus's comment on that sometime in the past, Pilate had killed Galileans and mingled their blood among the sacrifices. We've talked about this in the past, but we'll get to this more at the end of today. Then Kaufman continues, the Sanhedrin had just concluded the formal daylight trial, and this was like at dawn, at which they had condemned Jesus to death. But since they were prohibited by the Romans from the execution of such a sentence, they were compelled to pursue their intention in the court of the pagan governor. Okay, verse 2. And they began to accuse him, saying, we found this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ, a king. Okay, we know, see, they tried to entrap him in Matthew 22 about asking Jesus, is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar? And they were hoping that he would say no. Well, and really, they thought they had him in a catch-22. If he said no, well, then he was committing a capital offense against the Roman Empire. But if he said yes, well, then this was going to make all the Jews mad because they did not, just like in our history, the Europeans, the settlers, the pilgrims that came over here to America, they did not like paying taxes to England when they weren't getting any benefit. And that's exactly what these Jews were doing in that day. Their tax money was going to Rome, to Italy, and it was being used wastefully however they wasted it. And they didn't like it then, and our ancestors didn't like it, having to pay taxation without any representation. And our ancestors had that Boston Tea Party to rebel against it. But anyway, so they felt like, and I guess they did, have Jesus in a catch-22. No matter which way he answered, yes or no. Well, guess what? He didn't answer either way. He told them, pay to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and you pay to God what belongs to God. And so he did not object and teach the people not to pay taxes to Caesar. So this is an outright lie. Okay. Kaufman's comment here is, there was no mention by those hypocrites of the true reason for their condemnation of Jesus, which was that he claimed to be the divine Messiah, the unique Son of God. That's why they were killing him. They did not like that he was claiming to be God's unique Son. Concerning the triple allegations in this verse, they charged Jesus, first with sedition, seditious agitation, second with encouraging men not to pay tribute to Caesar, and three with assuming the title king. Every single item of this charge was a lie, and they knew it. As far as forbidding to give tribute to Caesar, Kaufman said, these were the most slanderous accusations that could be devised. Our Lord's conduct disproved them, and his decision in the case of the question about the lawfulness of paying tribute to Caesar from Matthew 22 was so fully known that we find that Pilate did not pay the least attention to such malicious and unfounded accusations. Neither Jesus nor any of his followers from that day until now ever prevented the paying tribute to Caesar, that is, constitutional taxes to a lawful prince. Okay. Verse 3. Then Pilate asked Jesus, saying, are you the king of the Jews? And Jesus answered him and said, it is as you say. And Kaufman said, the very first thing Pilate did was to attempt to avoid condemning Jesus or even judging him at all. Pilate said, you take him and judge him according to your law. To which the council replied that they were not allowed to put any man to death, revealing their deadly purpose in the case of Jesus. So, they wanted Jesus put to death, and it was not lawful for them to put Jesus to death. Only the Roman Empire could condemn, give a capital judgment. And so, in doing that, Kaufman says they revealed their deadly purpose in the case of Jesus, that they were not satisfied with a scourging, with a public humiliation. They were going for the death penalty, and they were not going to stop before they got there. Some have understood this verse as indicating Pilate's willingness to accept the third charge against Jesus, that he laid claim to being a secular king. But that simply cannot be true. Pilate knew the Jews would follow a king, not deliver him up. Thus, the third charge was as clearly false in Pilate's understanding of it as were the others. If Jesus had been what the Sanhedrin said that he was, seeking a secular kingship, the Jews would have followed and supported Jesus unto death. In fact, some of those very hypocrites had spent an entire day trying to get Jesus to be the quartermaster of a secular army against Rome, from John chapter 6. Pilate's pinpointing the third charge had no reference to his being taken in by such a lie, but rather shows his astonishment at this charge. Now, as far as they tried to get Jesus to be their general in a secular army and raise up a fight and to start a war against Rome, to start a rebellion to try to kick Rome out of Judea. And because at that time, They had the false thought that that's what the Messiah would do. So that there in itself is also evident that they knew that Jesus was the Messiah. But here we are 2,000 years later, and the modern day Jews think the same thing, that Jesus, that the Messiah is going to be a military general, but now it's going to raise up and fight out, get rid of the Muslims out of Jerusalem, and so they can retake the Temple Mount and rebuild the temple. And so that's what they're looking for today. So nothing has changed with them in 2,000 years. They misinformed thought that Jesus, that the Messiah was going to be a general then, and today it's the same thing. They've never changed on that. They were wrong then and wrong still today. So that's something, you can be wrong for something for 2,000 years. As far as the statement, "It is as you say," this is an affirmation of Jesus's kingship. So he was saying that he was a king. He was not denying that, but he was just not going to raise up a seditious army against Rome. And Jesus tells Pilate, and it allays Pilate's fears when Jesus tells Pilate that my kingdom is not of this earth. Otherwise, my servants would fight. And so that was all that Pilate needed to hear. Well, if you have a heavenly kingdom, well, you're not going to fight for the kingdom here on this earth. So that's all he was worried about. He just didn't want an uprising coming up, and Jesus allayed his fears, and so that was nothing to condemn him on. Okay, from John it is learned that the Lord explained thoroughly to Pilate that his kingdom was not of this world. There is no evidence at all that Pilate ever doubted Jesus's word on this. This is proved by Pilate's immediate announcement of Jesus' innocence. The Sanhedrin objected to Jesus' claim of being king, but Jesus shows Pilate that these kingly claims, however distasteful to the Jews, were no offense or menace to the Roman authority. In addition, Jesus told Pilate that his kingdom was not of this world. It was sufficient to inform Pilate that Jesus' kingdom made no use of physical power, even for purposes of defense. A heavenly kingdom could cause no trouble to Rome. Okay, verse 4. So Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowd, I find no fault in this man. And Kaufman said, this is another effort of Pilate to avoid condemning Jesus. There have been at least 7 of these in all. This was the point at which Pilate should have dismissed the charges, called out the soldiers in the Antonian fortress, and dismissed the mob. But in the meantime, he had a brilliant idea prompted by what the council said next. Okay, which was verse 5. But the Sanhedrin were the more fierce, saying, he stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Judea, beginning from Galilee to this place. Well, when they mention Galilee, Pilate sees an out. Said, okay, well, guess what? Herod has jurisdiction over Galilee, and Herod is in town for this Passover festival feast. And as a result, I'm going to send him to Herod. Okay, Kaufman's comment on this verse is, as the Jews found that their charge of sedition was deemed frivolous by Pilate, they changed it and brought a charge equally false and groundless against his doctrine, stirring up the people. And this had connotation of sedition and was as false as all the other charges. Again and again, Jesus had carefully avoided arousing any unnecessary enthusiasm of the people. And as far as Galilee was concerned, that was the word that caught Pilate's attention, giving him what he hoped would be a means of avoiding responsibility. And so he will pass Jesus on to Herod's jurisdiction, and then that's why Jesus ends up going to the trial of Herod. And we will cover that after we sing.